Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department. The world discovered together.
Well, Amber Guinness, she's a cook and author who lives in Tuscany in Italy. She wants to share the secrets of good Tuscan cooking, and her new book focuses on the next few months and the joy of a hearty winter meal. It's called Winter in Tuscany, Cozy Recipes and the Quanto Basta Way, and it's published by Thames and Hudson. And yes, she is descended from the famous Guinness family. Amber Guinness, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miriam. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much. We'll talk all about the book in a moment. I think, Amber, we go back about seven generations, is this right, to get to the famous Arthur Guinness. But would you mind telling me a little about your own parents, Jasper and Camilla, and how they came to buy the house in Tuscany?
Yeah, of course. So my parents met in Florence. They're both obviously English of Irish stock, but they moved to Florence in the late 70s, early 80s for various reasons. My mum was studying an antiquing course at a sort of famous Italian antiquers, and my dad was working at something called the British Institute of Florence, lecturing on literature. And they decided to stay, and they bought a farmhouse and decided to raise their family here. So this beautiful farmhouse in sort of quite near Montalcino, which is an area famous for red wine, for Brunello. That's where the house is. And they restored it and they brought us up there. And so we had this funny, beautiful, idyllic Tuscan upbringing till I was 13.
And I think you grew up there with your sister, Claudia. I mean, did the locals always accept you, Amber? Or were you always seen as like the English family?
It's so funny to think of this now, because now that area where we grew up is so so touristy, not overly touristy, but it's really popular. It's very well visited. There are some gorgeous hotels and wineries there. Whereas in the 90s, there were no foreigners who came there. And in fact, all my parents are Florentine friends when they moved an hour and a half south of Florence to this area. Said, why are you going? I mean, that's the middle of nowhere. No one's going to come and see you. And so, yeah, they were not used to outsiders in the 90s. So, yeah, we were definitely seen as the English family. Whereas now I walk down the street with my son, and the butcher, who's known me since I was a baby, sort of shouts after me. And we've very much assimilated, because now there are even, you know, more newcomers than ever. So we're seen as kind of old stock by this point.
And obviously for an Irish audience here, Amber, who are fascinated by the Guinness family, your family, do you mind saying your dad, Jasper, what is his lineage? What was his lineage, Amber?
So Edward Cecil, who, you know, is going to be the topic of the big new Netflix show, he had three sons, and the youngest of whom was called Walter, who was my dad's great-granddad. So that's where he fits in. And his father is someone called Jonathan Guinness, who was the eldest son of Brian Guinness, who was the son of Walter, if that all makes sense. And I mean, it's a lovely, lovely family to be part of. Everything I've read about, you know, Edward Cecil and all our ancestors sort of indicates that, you know, family was important, and we're all super close and we all know each other, and we're very lucky in that sense, I think.
Your dad, sadly, he died in 2011 when you were quite young, didn't he, Amber?
Yeah, he died when I was 21, exactly. Which I think anyone who's lost a parent, like getting used to a world or a reality without your parent is quite a thing to get your head around. So I think at any age, but yeah, particularly when you're in your early adulthood, I think.
Now, your mum is alive and well and an interior designer, but was she a good cook? I mean, did you learn from her?
Yes, so she was a fabulous cook, kind of renownedly so. And that's how my parents actually kind of attracted a lot of their friends to come and help with the renovation when they were restoring our home, Arniano. You know, sort of, you can come for a delicious lunch if you help build a pergola or help knock down a wall or plant some trees or whatever. So it was quite a social activity, you know, getting people down to lend a hand, and food was the main draw. She was very strict with me and my sister about learning to cook and about helping when we had guests and friends and family over. So we've sort of been both been doing it from her apron strings, I suppose. And yeah, we all love it. It's a lovely thing to be able to bring friends and family around a table, having made something for them all to enjoy.
You get a real sense from your book about how much you love Tuscany. I mean, what is it actually about this time of year that particularly appeals to you? Is it the fact that the tourists are all gone and the place is left more to the locals?
Yeah, it definitely is that, but it's also, it kind of goes deeper in that I think because we were brought up there and we went to school there, we were there, you know, solidly from September until June. You know, our movements were dictated, as with all families, by the school terms. And so in the summer, which is the time that traditionally people come to Tuscany, you know, there's long, languid, boiling hot days. That's when we would escape and sort of head north to England to visit my grandparents and stuff. And so the time I most associate with home is autumn, winter and early spring. And I think it's such a special time in Tuscany because autumn is sort of this time of really hard work in the countryside, in that it's when the olives are being harvested to make the new olive oil. It's when the grapes are being harvested for the wine. You have porcini mushrooms growing in the woods, so people are off, you know, foraging all on their days off. It's the time that the white truffles are growing in the valleys. And so it's just this extent, food-wise, it's really exciting because you kind of move into this time when all these really delicious, hearty, autumnal and wintry flavours start coming to the fore and you have these incredible ingredients to work with.
Oh, you explain that beautifully. Now, explain Tuscan cuisine to me. You say that a lot of it is very simple because people didn't have that much.
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting because, you know, most of the region was historically incredibly poor. You know, it was full of peasant farmers who would not accept not having something delicious to eat, you know. And so with the application usually of something as simple as time and patience, they would bring the most delicious flavors out of even the most frugal, humble ingredients. There's this delicious recipe in the book actually called rigatoni al sugo finto. So it's pasta with sugo finto, basically means fake sauce. And it is onions, celery and carrots chopped incredibly finely to mimic beef mince, and then cooked down for about 40 minutes with red wine. It can be off red wine, it can be, you know, scarti, they call them here, the stuff that's not drinkable, to make this sauce that seems like it's a bolognese or a ragu. So even if you couldn't afford meat in your pasta, you would create the sense that you were having it, and it's just as delicious, I would argue. So I think there is this kind of, there's something called l'arte di arrangiarsi here, which is you know, making do with what you have, and they're particularly good at it, I would say, in Tuscany.
And I was actually thinking, Amber, I mean, not even being in Italy, but, you know, even in Italian restaurants here in Ireland, the menu I often find can be really daunting. You know, you have so many courses. Can you explain how one should approach the premium, the secondi and all the other options?
Yeah, so I would say premium secondi nowadays, so it means first and second course. I think when I was a child, everyone still ate the way you were supposed to. You know, you would go to the trattoria and builders would be on their lunch break and they would have an antipasto to start. So something to kind of, antipasto means before the meal. And that's your crostini. It's little tidbits to basically satiate your hunger before you get into the main business of the meal, you know, the main dishes. And then a primo, again, was a kind of carbohydrate to kind of get you going, get you a bit fuller before your main dish, which would be a secondo, which isn't as daunting normally as kind of the northern tradition of like meat and two veg. But I would say nowadays it's all changed and people might have an antipasto and then a primo, or an antipasto and then a secondo. Nowadays, I would say people don't have the appetite to do the primo and the secondo together. We're just not as greedy.
Now, you have recipes in the book that are super quick to make, really easy pasta dishes. I mean, you even mentioned a couple there. But there are others then that are more of a calm weekend option. If you were now to pick one quick one for me, one slow that you would recommend, what would they be?
Okay, one quick. I mean, I love, one of my favourite dishes in the book is my emergency rosemary spaghetti, which is what I make when I've got nothing in the fridge, but I do have like a clove of garlic and some chili. I've got my rosemary plant on my windowsill. And that is literally, it's a bit like an aglio olio peperoncino, which I think is one of the most delicious dishes anyway. But I've just added a little bit of rosemary. It's a traditional dish from Siena. And it just adds this kind of aromatic flavor to this very simple pasta dish, which you can literally pull together in 8 minutes or 9 minutes or however long it takes to make. To cook the pasta itself. So I'd say that's a really good one. And then for the con calma section, which is the sort of slower weekend cooking, the lemony meatballs, which are from a restaurant in Florence called Alla Vecchia Bettola, are really delicious. They are soft and yummy and aromatic from the lemon. And they go really well with garlicky rosemary cannellini beans and maybe some wilted cavolo nero. And that's kind of, it takes a while because you mix the meat, you shape the meatballs, you let them rest a bit, and then you pop them in the oven. But they are really well worth it.
Talking about meat, they love all the cuts of meat in Tuscany, don't they? Nose to tail. Do you include offal
my gosh,
in your book?
Yeah. I actually don't, because I mean, they love it. And I think even I, who has lived here for 23 years, I like some offal, but some of the really intense stuff I can't do. But any self-respecting, born and bred Tuscan would say that they love lampredotto, which is the full stomach of the cow stewed down and cut up and put into a sandwich. But yeah, that's not for me.
What about, I love desserts. What about the dolci? What's your own favourite in the book?
Oh gosh, well, there's a delicious quince tart tartan, which is actually super easy and really lovely when those gorgeous quince are in season. There's also a twist on a Tuscan classic, cantucci and vinsanto. So cantucci, those little biscotti, like almond biscotti that you get. And they're normally served in Tuscany as a dessert in themselves with a glass of holy wine, which is vinsanto, the sweet dessert wine. And you dip the cantucci in the wine traditionally, but I've put those flavors into a semi freddo, so cream and whipped cream basically frozen with lots of vinsanto going through it and some crumbled biscotti. That is very delicious and a great thing because you can make it ahead if you're having a dinner party. Pop it in the freezer a few days ahead and then just serve it in slices when you're ready.
Sounds delicious. Now, you live, I think, in Florence mostly with your husband Matthew and son Milo. I love that you have these little warnings in your book about what not to do in a restaurant in Florence, like don't ask for ketchup or a cappuccino in the evening. What else should we not do if we're lucky enough to get there?
Oh my gosh. Well, I've heard people ask if they can have a table for dinner at 5 PM, and they just sort of slam the phone down. they are not going to cook you dinner at 5 PM. I've had a friend, which I think is a story I tell in the book, where she didn't want olive oil, there was bread on the table and she wanted some butter to put on the bread instead of olive oil. And, the waiter just brought, it was so passive aggressive. He brought a kilo block of butter in the wrapping and just plonked it on the table. And just sort of, right, you don't want olive oil here. Fine, have as much butter as you want.
Yeah, that would be very much Irish people. We actually love our butter. Yeah. One thing I need to ask you before I let you go. The book is called Winter in Tuscany, Cozy Recipes and the Quanto Basta Way. What is the Quanto Basta Way?
So so Quanto Basta is this gorgeous Italian kind of kitchen saying, which means as much as you need. And if you buy any cookbooks in Italy, in the list of ingredients next to, olive oil, butter, flour, whatever it might be, salt, it won't have, like we have in the English language, a teaspoon or 100 grams or whatever it might be. It just says the acronym QB. And it means quanto basta. And it means as much as you need, i.e. figure it out. Just taste as you go along. It's you don't need to be that precise. It's sort of that the approach of a glug of olive oil will do. Like, you don't need to get the measuring spoons out. And I just think it's a lovely, lovely philosophy for the kitchen and for life, really. It just basically means use a bit of common sense, use your instincts, taste as you go along, and don't get in a flap about it. You will make something delicious. It's food doesn't have to be a drama and cooking for people doesn't have to be a drama. Enjoy yourself and you'll make something perfectly delicious.
Well, that comes across so well in your book. So Amber Guinness, thank you very much for speaking to me this morning. Your book is called Winter in Tuscany, Cozy Recipes and the Quanto Basta Way. It's a beautiful book and full of wisdom as well. And it's published by Thames and Hudson. Thanks so much, Amber, for speaking to me this morning.
Thanks so much, Miriam. Thank you so much for having me.